So this next chapter in the Sefer of Rav Minchas Asher on Emunah and Bitachon, I wanted to study is Perek Yudalet, as you see here, which he entitles Banim Atem L'Hashem Elokeichem, which is based on a pasuk, which he will quote shortly. The second source in the piece is that pasuk in Devarim and Perek Yudalet. And as you will see when we get to the last page, but I've cheated since I already read the whole piece, this actually is a reprint of a sicha, or as he might say, a shmooze, that he gave during the Bein HaMitzarim. I don't know if it was during the 3 weeks, the 9 days, or on Tisha B'Av itself. But in addition to this single volume of Minchas Asher on Emunah and Bitachon, he also has a series of three svarim, three volumes, also all called Minchas Asher, which are sichot, more agadic, more hashkafa, musar, chasidus, not the halacha and the lomdus that he's more famous for, but on the holidays. He has a series of holiday svarim, which are not at all halachic, just based on the hashkafa, agada, you know, things like that, from the Moadim. So this piece, what we're learning now, is a reprint from volume 2 of the Sichot Minchas Asher, and it's dated, you know, Bein HaMitzarim. So I don't know if it just means the 3 weeks generally, or Dafka 9 days, or Tisha B'Av. And most of the piece has absolutely nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash, the Churban, or Tisha B'Av, or anything like that, except for the fact that he starts off with a Gemara. And when you realize that he was speaking, you know, in the proximity of Tisha B'Av, or maybe even on Tisha B'Av itself, I'm not sure, so then you can understand where he's coming from, even though in the body of the piece, it's kind of weird to me. He starts off with this Gemara, which we'll see in a moment, about the Churban, but then in the body of the piece, he never comes back to the Gemara. So I'll suggest at the end what I, you know, it's only my suggestion, even though I think it's somewhat fairly clear, but my suggestion is what he has in mind and, you know, how he thinks the Churban relates to that. But really, most of it is going to be about what does it mean to be Banim L'Hashem Elokeichem. And as we shall see, or as some of you may know, even if you're Balei Kriya, or just people who are, you know, more fluent in Chumash, you know that this phrase comes from a pasuk, which the continuation talks about mourning. And that's really the segue from the Churban in the Gemara, which we're about to see, to the rest of the piece, which is Rav Asher is going to be using this as a springboard to speak about, initially, the Gemara about national mourning, the mourning over the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and then he's going to bring that back to what does it mean to mourn over a personal loss, Rachmana Litzlan, and how does that relate to our relationship with Hashem when somebody in our own family or a close loved one is taken from us. So let's start at the beginning. This is a Gemara in Baba Basra of Daf Samach Amud Bet, famous Gemara, right at the end of Cheskas Sabatim. Some of you may have already learned that this year, the very end of Cheskas Sabatim, the Yeshiva's Masechet this year. So the Gemara has an Agadah about the Churban, and the Gemara tells us as follows, Tana Rabbanon, when the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, Rabu Prushin be Yisrael, Shlolechol Basar, Shlolishtos Yain. All of a sudden, there was an increase in ascetics. All sorts of people who were ascetic and they wanted to withdraw from Olam Hazeh. And they decided that as a way of mourning the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, they were no longer going to eat meat or drink wine. Nitpa lehen Rabbi Yeshua. So Rabbi Yeshua apparently was bothered by this. And Rabbi Yeshua made sure to engage them. Amr lehen. And he said, Banai. Why is it that you are not eating meat or drinking wine? Amru, they said to him, Nochal basar shmimenu makriven agabi mizbeach machshev botel. You could expect us, how could we possibly enjoy meat at this point after meat, which was so prominently part of the Beis HaMikdash, it was brought as, you know, karbonos, and now we don't have that anymore. How could you expect us to enjoy meat anymore? It's, you know, it's a reminder of the Churban HaBayis. It's not respectful. You know, you could give different interpretations as to what they were thinking, but they directly attribute their asceticism of meat because of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. There's no more Mizbeach. Or similarly, Nishta Yayin, Shemanaskin Al Gabi HaMizbeach, Afshav Botel. Should we drink wine that, now that, you know, the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, we know that there was, as brought with the various carbonos, there was Nisach HaYayin, used to spill some Yayin on the Mizbeach. So how, that's not appropriate anymore. So Rabbi Yeshua listened to them. And in a very clever way of argumentation, he starts asking, you know, he ostensibly accepts their logic, but then he turns their logic against them. Amr lehem, he said, okay, I hear you. I can hear that. Im kain. However, according to you, lechem lo nochal, shekfar bitlu menachos. You shouldn't eat bread either. After all, wasn't that part of the menachos? So if the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, there are no menachos. You shouldn't eat bread either. So they accepted it. You're right. Okay. Good point. Efsher beperos. That's okay. We can live on fruit. So he continues. Peros lo nocha. You shouldn't eat fruit either. Shekvar bitlu bikurim. After all, there's a mitzvah daraisa that connects to the Beis HaMikdash. The farmer has to bring his first fruits to the Beis HaMikdash. There's no Beis HaMikdash anymore. We can't do the mitzvah bikurim properly. So you shouldn't eat fruits either. So they answered, you're right. We're not going to have that. Efsher beperos acherim. After all, bikurim is only in the Shiva Saminim. Bikurim is not with every fruit, only with the seven fruits that are specially considered the pride, so to speak, of Eretz Yisrael. So, you know, we'll have peaches and plums or something like that. We'll have other kind of fruits. We just won't have those. And then finally, he goes in for the kill, so to speak. He has his trump card. He says, well, last but not least, Mayim lo nishta. You can't even drink water. Shikvar bitul nisacha mayim. You know, on Sukkos, they used to have a special, form of avoda where they pour the water, the nisacha mayim. And at that point, they had no more answer. Shatku. They were quiet. In other words, you know, it's one thing to have a few peaches and plums, but if you can't even have any water, you're simply not going to be able to survive. And they basically accepted that. Once he's been able to kind of turn their argument against them, so now he has to turn his attention to the broader point, which is, well, if they got it wrong, if they were too extreme, so what is the appropriate way, what is the correct way to mourn the Beis HaMikdash? Amar lehem banai, says, listen to me, my children. Bov omer lechem sholis abel kolikar yefshar. To tell you not to mourn at all, well, that I'm not going to do. Shekvar nigzera gzera. It's machlokus in the Mefarshim what that means. Shekvar nigzera gzera mean the gzera to destroy the Beis HaMikdash was already decided. The die has been cast to destroy the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed and therefore obviously you should mourn. Or does he mean no, nigzera gzera, that the chachamim themselves had already made a certain gzerot to mourn the Beis HaMikdash? That's the machlokas and the mefarshim. But either way, it's clear that you have to do some amount of mourning is appropriate. On the other hand, as he just demonstrated with great, debating skills, great argumentation, he says, "Lut abel yoser midai yefshar." It's also clearly not going to be possible, or I would add proper, to go too far. Ein gozen gzeira letzibur elam kein rov letzibur yichon lamod bo. Right? How many people could possibly be ascetic like even you guys wanted to be, let alone the fact that I've shown your logical inconsistency? Now, Rav Asher, ends the quote of the Gemara here. The Gemara continues by saying that this is a segue into mentioning some of the gzeirot that they had, that the Chachamim made on the Beis HaMikdash. The idea that when you build a house, for example, right, you're supposed to leave a little bit of it unplastered as a zecher l'churban, right? For whatever reason, it's not clear 100% why, that's not such a common practice in Chutz La'aretz, but I'm sure you've all seen that in houses in Israel, where sometimes by the door or sometimes near the entrance, you have a part of the wall that's left unpainted or wallpapered or something. So there's different things that we do to be zecher l'churban. When somebody gets married, they're supposed to put some ashes where his tefillin are, that's zecher l'churban. There's different things the Gemara mentions. So certain things, yes, there is some level of mourning, but not too extreme as they wanted to do. Now, again, perhaps if I remember, I'll get back to the Churban at the end of the Shir, but really the rest of this Sicha has nothing to do with the Beis HaMikdash. He then uses this as a springboard to quote the pasuk that we started with, the pasuk that's the title of the Shir, of the essay, of the chapter, Bani Matem Hashem Elkechem, Lo Sisko Tudu, Lo Tasimu Karcha Bein Einechem. And that pasuk, tells us not only the famous and very nice sounding phrase that we are the children, the special children of Hashem, Banam Hashem Lokechem, but also Losis go to do Velosasimu Karcha. And what exactly does that mean? So in fact, we know Losis go to do has other interpretations. Losis go to is one of those kind of very vague phrases which allows for multiple interpretations. Torah Shebaal Peh, one of the interpretations, which clearly is the content of our of Rav Asher's Sicha, and here is not, that you shouldn't have too many minyanim or, divisiveness in your community. Not that kind of losses go to do, but rather you shouldn't mourn too much if, God forbid, somebody dies. Apparently, it used to be the practice in the ancient world, or certainly in the pagan Avodah Zarah world, that they used to cut themselves as a sign of mourning. And this is actually an Isser Doraisa of losses go to do. This is what the Pasuk is coming to prohibit. However, what is still unclear is, even if that's what Losis Kodudu means, what does that half of the Pasuk have to do with the opening and the introduction of the Pasuk? Banim Hashem Elokeichem. Can't you just tell me that you shouldn't, cut yourself when somebody dies. That's not an appropriate way of mourning. What does that have to do with the fact that you're Hashem's children? So again, the flow seems to be that after having started off with the question of national mourning and the premise being that some mourning is appropriate, too much is not appropriate. So now we are going to address in a similar way, what is the story with mourning on a personal and an individual level? So here he says at the end of the page, Shnei perushim matzinu b'pasuk zeh b'devi rabbosein arishonim. If you take a look at the Mepharshim, and as you'll see here, he has the Eben Ezra and the Sforno. They represent two approaches in the Mepharshim for how to understand what does bani mean, and in what way is that informing and relating to the continuation of the pasuk. So the first interpretation is from the Eben Ezra. What does bani mean? Once we establish that Hashem is your father, and he loves you as much, if not more, than any father loves his children, don't mourn in such an extreme way. Don't go so far, go overboard, even cut yourself, no matter how bad it is. Why? What's the logic? Because you have to realize that who caused this bad thing to happen? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not some distant stranger. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is none other than Avinu Shebashamayim. If we're Banim, that means Hashem is Avinu. And just like a father only does things because he loves his children, so too HaKadosh Baruch Hu does things because he loves us, because they're better for us. Vimlo Tavinuhu, Kasher Lo Yavinu HaBanim Akatani Mas Yavim, Rak Yismichu Alav, Kein Taseh Gamotam. And just like a young child doesn't always understand, you know, what the parent wants, you know, in all seriousness, what to you or I as adults, Rachmana Litzlan, God forbid a million times, if somebody who we were very close with would die or something horrible would happen, we would be in tremendous mourning, we'd be questioning God's judgment, questioning God's justice, and we wouldn't understand it, right? But on some level, that's directly parallel to some little kid, to some two-year-old or something, you know, who wants a candy and his cruel father rips it out of his mouth. Or as I've often heard the example given, this is not mine, but I think it's an effective one. You know, imagine some child, you know, on the floor finds a bobby pin or some metal, you know, little piece. And then all of a sudden the parent sees he's walking over to the wall about to stick it into the outlet. God forbid, Rahman al-Slan can electrocute himself. And the father sees at the last minute and runs over and gives him a big potch and slaps his hand. Or, you know, the common example of a little child, he starts walking into the street without looking, not at the crosswalk, God forbid, the father sees him, pulls him back. You know, what does the father do? And I have to say, I've done this even once or twice over the years with my young children. Not only do you take a deep breath, Baruch Hashem, the child's okay, what's the next thing you do? You start yelling at the child, maybe give the child a potch. And in all these cases, it's clear to anyone who's actually observing this as an adult, why is the father yelling? Why did he pull the child away? Why did he take away the whatever? Not because he's cruel. Not because he hates the child, because he loves the child. He knows this was best for him. But if you're the child, if you're the two-year-old, or you're the five-year-old wandering into the street, you don't understand what you did wrong. All you see is your father being so mean to you, screaming at you, potching you, whatever the case may be. So, again, I'm not sure if it's an exact mashal, but I think it's a pretty good one. So too, as adults, just like we grow into realizing that our parents love us, they want the best for us, and therefore, even when we don't understand why they're doing what they're doing, we trust them. So too, says the Eben Ezra, even when bad things happen, really bad things, he's not denying that from our perspective they're bad. But realize, he says, that just like a Kadosh Baruch Hu, just like a father only does good things for his children, so too a Kadosh Baruch Hu only does good things for us, and therefore we should trust him just like a child would trust his parents. And then he adds, and this is because, ki am kadoshata, you're not just stam a person, you are part of this special nation, Hashem's chosen nation, ein cha kishar kol hakananim. Hashem may love all of his creatures, but yes, there is a chiba yisera, a special love for the Jewish people. We are the banim Hashem Elokeichem. Al kein lo tase kim ma'aseihem. And therefore, what the Eben Ezra sees is that when the Kna'anim, the Ovdei Avodah Zarah, the pagans at the time of the Torah, why did they cut themselves when they had a loss? Because that was their way of, in an incredibly extreme way, expressing their grief and even the injustice of what happened to them in their perspective. So says the Eben Ezra, that's what the Torah is prohibiting. We can't go overboard because that would, whether we realize it consciously or not, it's not just an expression of grief. Such an extreme expression of grief would also be a denial of this basic foundation of Emuna, which is a linchpin of our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is our Emuna, that He is our Father, He loves us, as much, if not more, than any other father loves his children. And therefore, if he does things even that appear hard for us, but on some place in our hearts, we have to have the trust that Hashem is doing it for the best, just like a parent would do that. So Ad Kan, Mahalach number one, the first approach to the Ibn Ezra. What's the connection between the first part of the Pasuk and the second part? Barim Hashem Elokeichem, remember Hashem loves you like a father, and therefore don't mourn excessively, mourn appropriately, but not excessively, because that would express a lack of emunah in your father-son relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. However, there's a second interpretation Rav Asher calls our attention to, and that is from the Sforno. Barim Hashem Elokeichem, lo tizkoredu, what does that mean? She'ein ro'i laharos tachlis hadaiga. You shouldn't have extreme grief or tsar al hakarov hames, over a relative who passes away. Kishenishar karov nichbad mimenu bemala ubatikvas tov. Completely different approach. Completely different approach than the Ibn Ezra. It's an expression of emunah, but it's not philosophical in a certain sense the way Ibn Ezra is. Rather, he's saying that there's a certain emunah, which if we really feel it, if it's what I would call an emunah chushit, like it's not just, you know, we're talking the talk, you know, we're not just mouthing the words, we're not just parroting it, we really, really feel it. If we really, really feel this emunah of Hashem being our father and us being his children, then it will actually be a source of comfort. It's not just about what's appropriate and not appropriate, the way the Ibn Ezra framed it. From the Sforno's perspective, this belief will give us a level of comfort and therefore prevent excessive mourning. How so? It's not that chas v'shalom you don't care about or love or are grieved about the loss of, insert, whichever relative you want. Of course you could. But nevertheless, says the Sforno, despite the pain you have at the loss of whatever that relative is, you should still feel a measure of comfort because you realize that all is not lost. You're not abandoned. You're not all of a sudden orphaned. You still have Avinu Shebashamayim, who is not only a relative, if you will, but should be, if you will, our closest and most important relative who is still around. Now, he doesn't exactly give this mashal, but I think what he's trying to say, I'll just frame it in my own way, the way I understand this, and that is, if God forbid, a million times, somebody would lose their spouse at a relatively young age, or lost one of their siblings at a relatively young age, horrible, horrible tragedy, unquestionable, but your parents were still alive. There's no question, I don't mean on them at the moment. Maybe it would be too hard. But on some intellectual level, and certainly over time, having still close relatives, none closer than your parents, still alive, who could still help you, still comfort you, still be part of your life, there's no question that that would take some of the sting away from the loss of the relative. Doesn't mean you love that relative any less, you miss them any less. But eino dome, if you lost that relative and you had no one else in the world, compared to if you have Avinu Shebashamayim. And again, I'll just mention, just to illustrate the point, not Chas V'Shalom in any way as a criticism. On the contrary, I was so moved by it. If you recall from last week, I'm sure you guys saw this, the news reports of the Pigua in Israel and the soldier who was killed. And what was particularly heart-wrenching, you know, even more than your typical story of terrorism or a soldier being killed, was that his father, the parents are divorced, and the father has no other children. When this soldier died, the father has no other children. Now, I have no idea if his parents are alive or not, but it didn't sound like it, and I didn't see them in any of the news reports. And the father, literally the day of the death, even before the funeral, and then at the funeral again, the father, in a heart-wrenching ways, made this point that his whole life was his son, and now that his son has died, he has nobody left. He's all alone. And that, you know, melted everyone's heart, including my own, I have to say. Just sitting in my desk, looking at my computer, you know, reading and watching those news reports, I was literally moved to some level of tears watching and listening to the father, just because it was just so heartbreaking. So, on a human level, I can't imagine, and I can only imagine. But on a somewhat philosophical level, if you will, what the Sforno is saying, and we have to hope, we have to pray that father over time, as a measure of nechama, he'll never be totally whole again. We understand that. But I hope at some point he has a measure of nechama. If you'd ask the Sforno, what should help him go on, what should be his measure of nechama, is to realize that, in fact, no one is ever alone, because Avinu Shebashamayim is still there. That's why the precedent, the first step of the pasuk is, Banam Hashem Elokeichem. Ulefichach atem banim l'Hashem shu avichem kayem la'ad. Ein roish etidagu v'tidablu b'tachlis al shumeis. Now again, the soldier is an extreme example, and even less extreme examples, people, at least on our level, and in our time, day and age, I can totally imagine, and I have no judgment, certainly in any negative way, I would hope the Sforno wouldn't either, that people certainly, at first especially, can be completely overwhelmed with grief, especially if it's a tragic death, like the soldier case or such others, and a person really could feel alone. But on some level, the more emuna that we have, that Avinu Shebashamayim and Banim Hashem Elokeichem, Mimela, it will provide, if not initially, then hopefully at least over time, a measure of comfort and take the sting away of that avelus, because after all, you're not alone. You still have a relative who's around, not just any relative, Avinu Shebashamayim. Now, with that backdrop, with these two approaches, so Rav Asher Weiss goes on and addresses now, after having a little bit of a Tanakh shir, a little Chumash shir, a little Psukim and Devarim and Mefarshim. So now Rav Asher Weiss goes on to the broader point. He says, Nistavinu lisabel alameis, we have to realize that there's a mitzvah to mourn. No one is saying not to mourn. And here you see the parallel to the Gemara and Baba Basra, even though he doesn't make the parallel. But again, just like the Gemara Baba Basra was saying, mourn, but not too much. So he says also, even though this whole pasuk of Loses Godudu was saying not to go overboard, but still there's a mitzvah to mourn. V'kach nohag avi ha'uma. It goes back to the founder of our whole nation, Avraham Avinu, no less. O terem nitna Torah l'Yisrael, even before there was a Torah, Avraham Avinu was mourning when Sarah died, right? V'tama Sarah b'kiryat Arba, etc., etc. V'yavar Avram, lispod Sarah, v'lipchosa, right? He mourned, he eulogized her, he cried. U'kvar kasav Rabbeinu Haramban, Ramban says in his Perush al Torah, Lo yesu ha'kosuv ha'bechi, you shouldn't think, chas v'shalom, you should not think that the Torah is saying, Loses go to do, don't cry, don't be sad. Right? That would be inhuman. Ki ateva yis'orer livkos, bepirdo avim, benidom af b'chayim. You should realize that, again, this is, I think, very profound and very important. Rahman al-Islam, we should never know from it. But it is part of life. Unfortunately, death is part of life. And says the Ramban, nothing in this pasuk, nothing in Hashkafas HaTorah, nothing in our Emunah prevents us from being sad, from mourning when there's loss, and from crying. That's natural. That's why Hashem made us. But, and here's the but, just like the Gemara Baba Basra said, don't go overboard, this pasuk is telling us on a personal level not to go overboard. And the next big body of the letter, of the piece, I should say, Rav Asher Weiss quotes extensively from an astounding and an incredible tshuva of the Radvaz. An incredible Radvaz. Usually the Radvaz is so important for halacha lamaisa, and we also know in certain parts of the Mishnah Torah, the Radvaz also has a commentary on the Rambam and huge posek. Here he's asked the shaila, it's in his tshuvas, but it's really more of a psychological or a philosophical question. And it's an amazing thing. Look how he describes it. Mishalo bacha kol yime evlo al b'no shemes. Evidently somebody's child died, and throughout the Avelus, the person, the father himself, did not cry. Sheila, al echad migdoli ador, a big rabbi, shemes lo ben, God forbid, Nebuch, he lost his son, v'lo horid alav dima achas. This person didn't cry even a little bit. And you can only imagine, right, if this would happen in our day, right, people would all be hocking, right, it would be the biggest hock. And what we want to know, half the people will be saying, look at this, what a gadol, what an incredible maimin, look how strong he is, he suffered such a terrible loss, he didn't cry at all. And other people would be saying, what kind of person, he is inhuman, he has a heart of stone, who doesn't cry over the loss of his son? And evidently, even without, you know, the social media and Facebook and the hack, in the time of the Radvaz, the same thing was happening. And therefore someone smart said, you know what, instead of saying Lashon Hara about the guy, let's just ask the Radvaz, the Gadol Hador, what's the right thing? Is that something good or bad that this rabbi did? And not so much that we should speak Lashon Hara about the rabbi, but more importantly, what should we learn for ourselves? What's the right approach? And says the Radvaz amazingly, Tshuva, Zu Mida Ra'a. It was a terrible thing that the rabbi did. Umore al koshi halev al roa tchunat hanefesh. It reflects a hardness of the heart, like a heart of stone, and a bad midos. He midas achzorius. It's actually cruel. And again, there's a certain paradox here. which is really, again, for those of you who are inclined more to philosophical issues, this is really a paradox, a philosophical paradox. On the one hand, we believe, Avinu Sheba Shamayim, Kol Da'av Rachmano, L'Tav Oved, it's all for the good, something Rav Asher is going to get back to in a few minutes. And he doesn't even mention this, we believe in Olam Haba, isn't the neshama in a better place? Haven't you ever heard that expression? And the answer to all those things is, yes, yes, and yes. And at the same time, we have to be human. And to be human means to mourn the loss of a loved one. And to do otherwise, he says, meaning to not mourn, would actually be cruel. And he continues, and I'll just skip a little bit. He talks about how there's certain, you know, non-Jewish philosophies who celebrate this, but he thinks it's a mistake. This is still in the Radvaz. It's not the approach of the Torah. And rather, he says here in the second line, Aval anachnu makablei haTorah. Yeshar lahaminu ladas ki olam hazeh inyan nichbad ma'od lemistapkim mimenu karoi ulemisnahagim bo kishura ubo yasig adam chayolam haba v'sheres hanefesh. And therein, those lines, which I just read quickly, but I'll translate them in a moment, that is the key of the paradox and the key to understanding Judaism's balancing act. Because what do people often say, and this is what the philosophers who I just skipped over say, they say, really, we're spiritual beings. Really, it's better to be in Olam Haba. Really, it's better to be in Shamayim. And therefore, there's no point in mourning human loss. People are finite. People are physical. The soul is in a better place. The soul's in Shamayim. Nothing bad. That's not the approach of Judaism. That's not the approach of the Torah. And there's actually a tshuva of the Radvaz, excuse me, of the Chasam Sofer, which is not in the article, but something that I'm familiar with on my own, who makes a similar point. What does Radvaz say here? And it is somewhat paradoxical, but guess what? We can do two things at once. We can walk and chew gum at the same time. We can believe in two things at once. Yes, of course, the ultimate goal and the ultimate place of the neshama is in Shamayim. We are ultimately, our neshama is a spiritual being. But nevertheless, our physical body and our time in this world has value. It's not pshat that because we believe in a neshama and in a shamayim and olam haba, therefore we negate and disrespect this world or this body. No, we believe that that's maybe the higher level of consciousness, a more important place, ultimately, on some level, yes. But not that, therefore, that negates any of the value of this world or our physical bodies, but rather, this world and our bodies have value because that's the way we live a life that will earn us and earn our neshama a ticket back to our ultimate destination of being in Shamayim. That's exactly the goal. That doesn't mean that this world is not worth anything. Adrabah, that's what gives this world and this body and our physical body meaning. And he goes on to quote, which I won't read because of time, the various halachos about the fact that the halacha itself addresses that certain amount of days after Rachman Atzlan, a person dies, you have Shiva and Shloshim, and we're supposed to mourn, says the Radvaz, you see from here, if we're supposed to mourn, that obviously we think that this world is meaningful, and therefore the loss of someone is a tragedy. And therefore Rav Asher sums up, you can't not cry or not mourn. On the other hand, and again, this is exactly the parallel on a personal level to what the Gemara said on a national level. And here, we'll just, if you give me, excuse me, three more minutes, we'll just finish up the last point which Rav Asher himself makes in his own kind of a chiddush. And he says as follows. He says, Shoresh ha'evil v'hayagon b'mosa ohavim kaful m'chupalhu. He says, really, when you get down to it, if Rachmana Litzlan, somebody close to you, dies, there's really two things that are causing the sadness, two things that are causing the mourning. The first thing is the very sharp, painful reality of death itself. There's nothing worse than that. The ultimate punishment, the ultimate pain, death itself. But then there's a second thing, which is not just death per se. The idea of being abandoned, of being orphaned. And missing and longing for that person. So one is nebuch, you feel bad for that person, death. On the other hand is the feeling of loss and being orphaned and alone in our own life. Says Rav Asher Weiss, ukeneged kfei lezu shnei perushim. This is his beautiful vort. What a beautiful vort by Rav Asher Weiss. Says these two points, these two dimensions of mourning, they parallel the two perushim we saw at the outset from the Sforno and the Eben Ezra. Corresponding to the feeling of abandonment, of loneliness, of being orphaned, the Torah reminds us, As the Sforno said, Banim Hashem, you're not alone. Even in death, Aviv Imo Shaladim Yisrael Einenu Nishar Levad. Even if your parents die, you're still not alone. HaKadosh Baruch Hu Avinu, who God is our real father, ultimately, V'anachnu Banav Chavivav Hu Nitzav Aleinu V'tomech Banu, he's always with us. As David HaMelech said in Tehillim, V'ani Tamid Imach. I'm always with you. I'm always holding your right hand, says Hashem. So that element of loneliness, that corresponds to the Sforno's idea of Banim Hashem Elokeichem. And the pain that just rips at our heart of Etzem HaMoves, how terrible it is, Nebuch, for our loved one who died, Amrit Torah, Banim Hashem Elokeichem, V'yadata, Im Levavcha, Ki Kashe Yasar Ishas Beno, ba 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 ba. That is to say, as the Ibn Ezra said, that no matter how you don't understand it, no matter how painful it seems, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our loving father. And if he decided that this person had to pass away, even though we can't understand it now, and maybe it'll take us a long time, if ever, to understand it, but we trust that Hashem has his reasons, and that on some level, it is for the best. And this is how he concludes the piece, but derech min hadrachim, one way or another, ba'ofen min ha'ofanim, in one form or another, yadanu called av rachmana letav avid. We ultimately believe that everything Hashem does, on some deep level, on some higher level, is for the best. Umidas hadin malav barachim, and even if we only feel and experience, as he says in the next sentence, Nidmilol Adam, Shmidas Adin Pagabo. You feel like Hashem is just meeting out strict judgment. It's just Midas Adin. Matthew Mechazak and Aramuna, that even when Hashem does this, nevertheless, Ein Ze Ela Me'ahavaso, it's all out of love. Yoser Me'ahavas Aim, Umarachim Yoser Mirachme'ah. He loves us even more than our own mother. He's as merciful even more than our own father. He is Avinu Shebashamayim. We are Banim Hashem Elokeichem. And there are two dimensions to that. One, as I say, somewhat philosophical, all for the best. One, the level of comfort, we're never alone. And those two things, and the Ibn Ezra and the Sforno, they correspond to the two elements that he was suggesting are the two things that go into people who are mourning. And number two, it gets back to the point of the parallel to the Gemara Baba Basra on the national level, that there is a philosophical paradox, that on the one hand, despite all these beliefs, we are not only allowed to, it's appropriate to mourn. It's appropriate to mourn the Beis HaMikdash. It's appropriate to mourn a human loss, a personal loss, but at the same time, never to go overboard because of one or both of these dimensions of Banim Hashem Elokeichem, the two ideas mentioned by the Ibn Ezra and the Sforno, respectively. Okay, everybody, fantastic, great seeing you.